Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. With midterms just a day or two away, there's been a lot of talk about the state of our political discourse, the extreme polarization and seeming inability of Democrats and Republicans to speak civilly with one another. While climate change may be one of the most extreme examples of partisan polarization on an issue that, at its heart, isn't even political. It's a matter of science. But overwhelmingly, those who voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016 say they are concerned or alarmed about climate change, while those who voted for Donald Trump are overwhelmingly doubtful or dismissive of climate change. In this deeply divided environment, is it even possible to find middle ground? That's the question freelance journalist Meera Subramanian set out to answer. She traveled to 8 conservative communities around the country to talk about climate change, and she's written about her experience in a series of stories published on Inside Climate News. That series is called Finding Middle Ground, Conversations Across America. Meera, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Heather.
What was the motivation for this reporting? What was it you were hoping to learn by talking to conservative voters about climate change?
Yeah, this was really a very direct response to the 2016 election and realizing how incredibly polarized and partisan this issue had become. And the folks over at Inside Climate News approached me about doing the stories because they knew that it was never as black and white as it's often portrayed in the media. So they sent me out with a lot of liberty to just go out into communities and find the stories about how people really were thinking or not thinking about climate change.
So how did you choose the communities that you visited?
There was a lot of legwork going into it. I wanted to get to different parts of the country, and I wanted to cover some of the key issues that are at stake with climate change, things like agriculture and heavy flooding events and sea level rise. So it was a lot of looking at what the election results were, going to really conservative areas and places where people were arguably feeling the direct impact of climate change and asking them, is this how you're looking at what's happening in your backyard?
Well, let's start with the closest to home story, which was right here on Cape Cod.
Right. Cape Cod was interesting because, you know, people just think Massachusetts is so solidly blue, but it really, there's a strong, very conservative element here on Cape Cod. And you see that with all the political signs that are up along roadways now. And we are dealing with some really upfront issues around climate change. Sea level rise here is increasingly a concern. People are seeing it. There are flood advisories when it's not raining because at full moon and new moon, the tide is just coming higher. There's been a lot of erosion. Storms are hitting the coastlines pretty aggressively. And I went into an area there in Barnstable, which is just a very vulnerable area. The bay is on one side and the marsh is on the other, and the water is coming in from both sides at some of the big storms. Like last winter, they got hit multiple times from nor'easters.
We often hear when polls about public opinion on climate change come out that extreme weather events can change attitudes. But this is a community that's feeling the impacts on a regular basis, and yet you still found people who doubt whether or not this is a human-caused climate change problem.
Yeah, and that does get to the root of a lot of this, is that people are seeing changes almost everywhere I went. People recognize that there were changes happening. What is more tricky is what people are attributing it to. I mean, across the country, they say the weather always changes, the climate changes. This used to be under glaciers. I heard that in Wisconsin. I heard that in North Dakota. I heard that here. It's true. A lot of these places were miles under ice sheets at one point. What's more nuanced is whether people think that we could be having an effect on what's happening now. And often a lack of understanding of the pace of acceleration of what's happening now. And that pace can't be attributed to anything else besides human-caused burning of carbon.
I'm talking with journalist Meera Subramanian about her reporting on conservative views on climate change from around the country. And I want to jump to Montana because your reporting there highlighted the fact that you can find people who live in the same community, have even sometimes the same job, essentially, have very similar backgrounds, and yet have completely different views on climate change. And you, in particular, were talking with fly fishermen. Let's actually hear from one of those guys.
I don't think it's man-made. I don't think there's anything we can do to change it ourselves. What I see about the climate is nobody can predict it. And as soon as they do, it changes again.
A lot of skepticism about the science
there.
Yeah,
yeah. So that was Frank Stanchfield, and he owns an outfit right along the river. It's absolutely stunningly beautiful, and he's had that for decades. So he's seen changes. He acknowledges that it doesn't get nearly as cold as it used to. You used to get 50 below multiple times a year. Now that doesn't happen. So he has seen the changes, but he just writes it off that it's just a warming phase. It'll get cool again. And nothing was really swaying him.
And yet in the same community, another person who runs an outfitter, a fly fisherman, completely different view.
I'm a Republican. I'm proud to be one. I'm for a smaller government. I'm pro-business. I believe in climate change. There's just a lot of signs that indicate that things are changing.
That's Craig Fellin, and he also owns an outfit for and is a devoted fly fisherman. But he was really interesting. He harkened back to that it was not that long ago that Republicans were the conservatives. I mean, conservative, conservation, root of the same word,
right?
And it was Nixon who helped establish the Environmental Protection Agency that is now completely under siege from the current Republican administration. So Craig is hearkening back to Teddy Roosevelt Republicans. You know, we take care of the land. The land takes care of us. It's good for the economy, right? And I think this is part of the equation that's so frequently left out from these discussions is that a healthy climate allows business to happen. I was finding these stories all over the country that, you know, peach farmers who are failing or dog sledders who can't find sponsors because their races get canceled because of no snow. So there is an economic component to a lot of these discussions.
Well, and we often hear from Republican politicians about the fear of negative economic impacts of addressing climate change. But what you're talking about is negative economic impacts of climate change.
Yeah. There's a strong argument like, well, we don't want to spend the money. And there was a lot of anti-regulation sentiment that I heard intricately linked to being against climate action or even against acknowledging that climate change was happening, because then that basically opens the door that you should take action. So there was a lot of that sentiment that they just don't want the government telling them what to do.
I'm talking with Meera Subramanian about her reporting on conservative climate views around the country. Another thing that was really striking was just the discontent, and this is not necessarily limited to climate change, but with the state of our public discourse. And this really came out in talking with one person in Divide County, North Dakota, who seems to be one of very few people in her community who does think that climate change is human-caused and doesn't really feel like she can talk with her neighbors about it, or for that matter, that anybody on either side of the climate change issue is doing a good job of talking about it.
I do think climate change is occurring, and in terms of long-term climate change, I think it's something that we have to be aware of and cognizant of. I don't think we should be sticking our heads in the sand on this. What's frustrating, though, is when you get into the extreme dialogue on both sides that's so polarizing, no one's going to listen to each other. Compromise and solutions become lost in the rants.
You also heard people talking about the fear of backlash within these small, tight-knit communities.
Yeah, these are small communities, right? So you kind of avoid the hot-button issues that might get you into a fight with somebody who you are not going to be able to avoid.
I mean, this is like the age-old don't talk politics and religion at the Thanksgiving table, right?
Yes, climate change has definitely been added to that list, it seems like. And yet, there was really an interesting opportunity that felt like it was there because these places are so small and because they have to deal with their differences, that there was kind of an opportunity I felt like that was there, that if people were willing to broach these subjects, that gains could be made. Like going back to Craig Fellin, the fly fisherman in Montana, when you started hearing about this, kind of from like the fly fishing community that, you know, like, oh, rivers are getting closed because they're too warm. The snow melt has melted off too quickly and we don't have any water running anymore, like these things that were very directly affecting him. So his interest was piqued. He actively sought out different sources of information. So he got out of the news silos that a lot of us are in. But the thing that really cinched it for him was hearing a geologist. So he went to this talk that was supposed to be about the geology of Montana. Totally tame, totally safe territory, right? And this guy, who he respected and he's listening to, told him that fact about, yes, there's always been climate changes, but the pace of what's happening now is completely off the charts. And while we go through warming and cooling phases, we should be in a cooling phase. And so Craig was really like, that just opened my eyes. So being open to that information when it's presented from people within their community is really powerful.
You also, in visiting West Texas, encountered a completely different kind of conversation there. So this area in West Texas has a booming wind energy industry, but they're just not kind of touching the climate change part of that whole industry.
Yeah, that was that was such a great story because it's West Texas, total oil and gas area. And then under 20 years of Republican leadership, it became a world-class leader in wind energy. And they did it because it was a way to make money. Like, Texans want to use their land, you know, grow crops, ranch, drill for oil and gas. And if you can put up a wind turbine and make that income come in too, do it. So they're kind of like the all of the above strategy that Obama talks so much about. They are doing it. But I went there and ended up focusing on the college students who were choosing to go in to become wind technicians. And their reasons were so fascinating. It's just like there's no boom or bust. With wind, it's a steady income. They just kept saying the wind always blows. They just kept saying it. And oil and gas is just known for its boom and bust nature.
Well, and also potentially a safer paycheck. You heard from one individual, James Beal, who said he'd been kind of warned away from the oil industry.
The day that I turned 18, he sat me down and made me promise him that I wouldn't go into the oil field because he didn't want to see me get hurt. I see the wind industry going forward. It's creating a major impact, I believe. Coal, oil, and gas have always been top dogs. And now they got somebody giving them a run for their money, and they're doing it cleanly.
I mean, he sounds really proud of this.
He is really proud of it. I mean, he actually talked about wind, like, that he was not doing well. He was not going in a good direction. And he feels really proud about having learned the skill. He loves the work.
Does that pride in wind energy, the success with wind energy, alleviate any of the maybe fears about how regulations or climate policies would impinge on personal freedom or economic growth or any of that, or open any doors to talk about climate change in a different way?
That's an interesting question. They still weren't talking about climate very much. It was an economic story. Like, they just, climate change was irrelevant really to the conversation. It was like, we're doing this because it's smart.
I'm talking with Meera Subramanian about her reporting on conservative views about climate change. There are conservative politicians. There are evangelical Christian leaders and devout evangelical Christians. There are young Republican voters who do think that climate change is a really critical issue, that it's man-made and we need to be addressing it in a way that stems from conservative values. Those views don't show up a whole lot in your 8 stories. Why not?
Well, there's one more story coming that's actually about young evangelicals at Wheaton College in Illinois. And that is exactly that story. You know, when you're talking to, I did talk to 80-year-old people who are like, yeah, if it's happening, it's not my problem. And they're right. So this, the brunt of the problems that our generations have created are going to be carried forth by the younger generation. So I went to Wheaton College, which is an evangelical college right outside of Chicago, and met some amazing, deeply devout, deeply faithful young evangelicals who are very concerned around taking action on climate. They don't question the science. They see all of God's creation around them, and the way that you live a daily prayer of honoring that is to take care of it, and that we're not doing that.
How did doing this reporting, having all of these conversations, change you and your views on this topic?
It made me a lot more compassionate for a lot of there's a lot of anger coming out, I think, on both sides of the issue. There is a cordiality that can happen when people have conversations one-on-one, which I'm fortunate that I get to do by going and spending quality time with people and not coming into it to fight them, but to just listen to them. That's not what's happening on social media and the ways that a lot of times these conversations, if you can even call them conversations, happen. And, you know, if anything, I would say that hopefully people within their communities can feel like they can at least broach these subjects gingerly and open the door for conversation.
Maybe we should be talking about it at the Thanksgiving table.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe we should try listening about it at the Thanksgiving table. Maybe that's what we need to do a little bit more of.
That's Meera Subramanian. She's a freelance journalist who traveled to 8 conservative communities around the country to talk about climate change and has written about her experiences in a series of stories for Inside Climate News called Finding Middle Ground, Conversations Across America. Meera, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. In the meantime, you can connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.